Welcome to the Fabulous by Design podcast. I'm your host, Ivana Ivanik. This show inspires and empowers you to take the next step towards a life you can't stop thinking about. I am bringing in people from all over the world with authentic and inspiring stories. People who change their lives from good to better, from miserable to great, turn tragedy into hope, and start living their dream life on own terms. Grab your favorite note-taking device, lean back, and get inspired. I believe that everything you need to create a life of your dreams is already within you. Welcome to another beautiful episode of the Fabulous by Design podcast. Today, I have the honor of speaking to Don Gleason, speaker, trainer, and coach, president and CEO of Achieve New Heights. During 42 years of experience growing and advancing to a leadership position in the military and private sector, he's focusing on helping teams and individuals grow through their potential. Stay tuned. In this episode, we will discuss the danger of being stuck in a place and a career where you no longer belong. We will dive into topics that will support you gain clarity for your career path. And Don will provide practical tips and share experiences from 42 years of observations in career transitions to different sectors. Tired of programs that leave you feeling the same? Rewire is Breathing Space's 12-week journey to unlock your true potential. Wouldn't it be incredible to experience transformation that awakens your most authentic self? No matter where you are on your journey of change, imagine being supported through your breath and connected to your purpose. Daily breathwork practices, deep release sessions, and targeted journaling. This is the work that changes everything. Ready to step into your power? Find the link to join Rewire in the show notes and get your 33% off as a thank you for being a valued member of this fabulous community. Beautiful day done. Thank you so much. For hopping on this conversation with me. I am excited.
Same here, Ivana. Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity. And I think 42 years, wow. But I have been so blessed and I spent a fantastic life. And I hope I get another 20 or 25 more years to parlay that information to others. And this is a great opportunity to do that. So thanks for the opportunity.
I hope so too. And I'm honored to have the pleasure to get all out of these 42 years of experience. And to kick off the conversations, I would love to hear from you. When did you first time experience fulfillment in your career? And what has gotten you there? Beginning, the middle, the now?
You know, it was probably very early on. I graduated college in 1982, and I joined the U.S. Air Force because there wasn't jobs otherwise. So we were in the middle of a recession and things were bad. And I had 454 rejection letters from companies that were not hiring when I graduated college. And so I joined the Air Force to get experience. And I got to do some really neat things. I know a lot of people got in the military and they just were told what to do. You know, you're going to be in this career field, you know, and then boom, they got these jobs. And they did it because they're professional, but they didn't really have the energy behind it. Since the fifth grade, I knew I wanted to be an environmental, and they put me into an environmental shop, and I got to work on, I got to draft a spill prevention control and countermeasures plan for fuel tanks and hazardous waste, hazardous materials. So if anything got spilled, how we were going to respond to it. I got to work on groundwater surveys. We had pollution, trichloroethylene in the groundwater. We had to track it back to figure out where it came from. I got to do a number of things that was really exciting for me. Now, my friends didn't think it was exciting. They wanted to design buildings and renovations, and that's great, right? I wanted to do the environmental work. So I found a lot of excitement right away.
I find this impressive. This is not what I hear often, and comparing it to my own story, I'm kind of envious.
Yeah. How long did it take you?
Forever, I think. A lifetime. I have to say, the first time I really experienced joy in my career was in my mid-20s. Okay. However, I started my first own company that I, just as I started it, just as well drowned it and didn't get any further. I was burned out. I was missing knowledge, skill sets, and I didn't dare to ask for help. And I think this is what overshadowed couple of years of running after money, barely making enough, overshadowed by, I was coming from the health industry initially, overshadowed by an eating disorder and a sports addiction. So it was kind of a given that I will not make it any longer. So eventually my body decided not to anymore. And I had, I would say today, the pleasure to hit rock bottom very early. And this is where my personal development started and what has gotten me where I am here. And the pleasure, literally where I enjoy working, getting up every day in the morning is since 2019.
Yeah.
So not a long time.
I appreciate what you just said, which was hitting rock bottom and then you move forward. I was listening to a podcast this morning where they were talking about so many very successful people today had to go through a number of failures to get to where they really want to be. And we think sometimes failure is final, and failure is never final unless we give up. Failure is always a step. So congratulations to you on moving through that.
I appreciate this. Thank you so much. It's and now looking back at it today, it might sound like a grand plan, but I was literally connecting dots my entire lifetime. And speaking of you, that you knew exactly that you, I mean, you didn't have a choice because of recession at the time. There was no job, so you went to the military. However, inside the sector, you got to do what you wanted to do. Did you know that? Was this what you studied? Was this your main interest? And how did you move from there? Because you mentioned you planned on being there for a couple of years, but you ended up being in the military for quite some more.
27 years. Yeah. All I wanted was 4 years. So my first 2 years, I got to work in environmental. And then my supervisor, my squadron commander, moved me into the readiness shop. And I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do with that. This was, you know, preparing teams to mobilize, you know, working the war plans and knowing how to, what equipment we had to have and how to put it on the pallets right, and all the requirements for people as they were processed through. And we did well at that. I had a great team. It was really exciting to be a part of it. And then I got to be a squadron executive officer for the commander. So those were not positions that I expected, but I was gaining experience. And then I moved to my next assignment, to next location, and I got back into environmental for another year, almost a year and a half. So it kept rejuvenating me. So I got to jump back to environmental to get me energized again. And then I took on other opportunities. The hard part was sometimes I got into facility maintenance, was, I have to say, maintaining everybody's lights and toilets and water lines and stuff. Yes, it's important, and I enjoyed it, but it didn't energize me. Right? Mm-hmm. But I kept getting back to the environmental area. And that was what energized me. So the Air Force played very well for me. Supervisors got me in the right jobs. And I think that's why it's so important. When I think about life by design, as we are supervisors, we have to help other people get to that position, right? We don't just assign people tasks because you're my team and therefore I give you tasks. We need to get to know our people, understand their desires, understand their expertise, their skill sets, their dreams. And now I can get them the right tasks that motivate them and grow them to be able to do that. Now, sometimes you can't always do that, right? So sometimes you got to take on tasks like I did that are outside your wheelhouse, but you've got to know your people or they will leave and go find it, especially today with the Gen Y and the Gen Z. You know, they want that significant role. They want to make a difference. And if we're not connected with them, we're going to lose them. I think retention is a huge issue.
Absolutely. It's not, I like to see this change on one hand. On the other hand, I can't imagine that companies that are still operating on an old leadership pattern, if I may call it like that, we'll be struggling a lot with young generations. On the other hand, our openness to learning from them can, I think, bring us a couple of steps further and quicker because it's challenges us in a way that we just need to look for different opportunities. And I want to tap into this shortly. First of all, thank you for giving so much insight into military work, because
you're welcome.
If someone is not aware of that, there comes this quick judgment being like, oh my God, military is war. However, the US Army does much more than that. So thank you for this clarification on and letting us see these different positions that are actually there. And environmental department, maintenance, and toilets are just as part
That's right.
as anything else. Looking now at, you said you were happy at all times. When did you first time observe that there is unfulfillment in people's careers, and what has gotten you to what you do today?
Oh, great, great question. That was my third, and it was for me, third military assignment. They tasked me to do a contract acquisition. So it was a $50 million contract, and I was going to be the source selection evaluation team chief, preparing things for the source selection authority to make his decision. So we had to go through the whole part of designing the contract, writing the contract documents, the statement of work, the figure out the evaluation criteria, all of these things. And it was very interesting to me. I had had a course in my master's degree just before that, which prepared me for it. But the problem was my boss assigned me the task and like the next week told me, oh, don't worry, we're going to get you off that task, just like all the other people who have led that acquisition. So you're not going to be doing that for long. So don't spend too much time on it. And the commander told me, we've had too many changeovers. You're it. You're going to stay on this until it's done. So my boss and his boss's boss were at odds with each other in what they were telling me. So when I would try to spend some time working on that project, he would criticize me, you know, and downgrade me on my performance report and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, you got me in a tough spot here, right? You assigned me the task. The boss wants it done. It's important for the organization, but you are going to downgrade me for doing it. Put me in a, and I, my wife actually noticed that I would start, I could be sick periodically, right? And I don't know if it was probably more, it's like a mental health day if I think about it now, right? I just didn't want to go face that. And I'd be at home working and my wife was like, are you really okay? No, you don't seem like, you're not really that sick. Why are you home? What's going on? And we'd talk about it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not. So that gave me a great experience of seeing that in other people. When I thought it was important to A, give clear guidance as I was a commander and supervisor. I'm not going to put somebody in that position, hand them a responsibility, and then tell them not to do it. That's like, to me, that's stupid. So
that's
why
a
do that?
Difficult path to handle. Yeah, this is as well, if you're having assigned a manager position and then being micromanaged on every step you make, this is daunting. This is actually quite the opposite of empowering.
That's
and
right.
I think what I've seen or the people I get to talk to, it's often that we, first of all, we don't see it immediately. There must be a season of, as you said, illness or some sort of feeling of stuckness till we actually take action and hopefully take action. Most of the people don't. I would like to explore a little bit the danger or see your perspective on this. What happens or what happened also to the people you've been speaking to during your entire career, if you are stuck for too long in one place where you no longer feel wanted, valued, or where you perhaps even outgrew your position?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, think about some of the surveys that we're talking about these days. 65% of people are not, is not energized by work. They're disconnected from work. Only about 32% really are energized by their work. Engaged.
That's very little.
Engaged is the right word, right?
For the time spending in our jobs, 32% is very little, in my opinion.
Yeah. And then we have the, I'm trying to think of the word, they're disengaged. They're not actively working on the things. They come in, they do the minimum.
Surviving.
And surviving.
Going for the paycheck.
Yep. And people are getting criticized for that, but that's been going on for decades. When people are not energized and it's not in the right position, they're not in the right leadership, they're not in the right culture, they will start to slow down. They will do the minimum. And what happens is the organization's not achieving, the team is not achieving. They recognize real quick who they cannot depend on, right? If Don is doing the minimum and somebody needs to give me a task and I don't do it, that impacts the whole team. So they're not going to give me tasks anymore, right? So in some ways that facilitates me not doing things And that happens way too much. We get criticized with our government civilians in the US government that a bunch of them are retired on active duty, so to speak. And I never bought into that, right? You're getting paycheck. I got to find out from you what things energize you. How can I get you connected to this work? And sometimes that's harder than others, right? Some people are tougher, and some people have been retired on active duty for too long, and it's tough to change the habit. But I'm not trying to be a mongrel, but I'm trying to motivate you to be a productive team member. Because when we downsized and I went from 20 to 10, I needed the 10 to be good, solid performers. So what do I have to do to get to know you to motivate you? I think it relates into a monetary piece. In the military, it goes into, not winning the war or the battle. So,
I see that. I see that. I think the example you just gave in the military, we can immediately translate to any corporate role, to any corporate team. If we are not seen, if we are not heard, that it will be going for the paycheck, which
That's right.
in my opinion, if someone makes the conscious choice to do so, because I think we can find fulfillment outside of our careers, but if there is no understanding that we can't do that outside of our careers and we still want to find it within the career and do not see the opportunities to ask for a supervisor, to ask for support, then it's a lose-lose game. On the other hand, I see a lot of employees pointing fingers at the employers and being like, ah, he doesn't do that. They don't give me this. They don't do that. And I think that my question is to you, who is responsible? Which party is responsible for a functional team and goals, achieving goals?
Both of them actually are, but the bottom line is the supervisor. The supervisor sets the tone, right? I always tried to make sure that I gave more effort than anybody else. And, if I expected them to be late, I would be there late. If I expect them to work on the weekends, I would work on the weekends. If I needed them to, be integral, act with integrity, then I had to act with integrity. I couldn't be a hypocrite. Just wouldn't fit with me. So I had to set the tone. And if I did that, I found my people respected that. And I was known as a good leader, and they would follow me, right? John Maxwell says, if you're leading and you turn around and there's nobody there, you're just out taking a walk by yourself, right? And I think it's a great display. So you've got to, the supervisor has to set the tone, set the vision, communicate clearly, set the expectations, hold people accountable. But the individuals have a responsibility too to step into it. You're getting a paycheck. You're responsible to the organization to do the job and to do the job to the best of your ability, not to a minimum ability.
Thank you for elaborating, because sometimes we easily point fingers, we easily judge, especially when we feel in a place that we are not heard or misunderstood potentially.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that the same way?
Oh, absolutely. I've been in positions, especially after I failed my company. I chose for a job where they didn't want to hire me for the job because it was far below my education and potential, but I had to beg them for this job, simply because I needed my time to heal. I needed cash. I wanted to have a stable day, so to say, that I have to get up, I have to get somewhere that helped me through depression, through the pain, and through everything I've been. And this was also the company where I met my mentor, who helped me then, a
Oh,
very good
goodness.
strategist, who helped me then translate my mistakes from my previous company so I could build the company I'm building right now, which was a gift. I just call it a gift. And I did see that because I was out of the game. I was never pursuing a career in that company that was known. If I got a offer to do something else, I politely declined, where some people were like, what is she doing? Because not everybody knew my background, right? Not everybody knew what's going on, that I consciously chose for that. And everybody was saying like, oh, I didn't think they will hire you because for what you did already before. I was working at a reception. I was doing administration. And then later I was supporting the CEO, but this was peanuts for me. It was not a job that's challenged. But I had time to observe. And these observations were always something that stimulated me. And I was seeing that people coming to chat with me, I was the person having time, right? And they come like, oh, they didn't do this. And then we had this mentorship, but then they all do this. And it was a great company that supported employees in their growth very much. But there was resentment and there was neglect. People were neglecting and not wanting to put in the effort. And it was easier to say like, oh, they didn't do great. The mentorship is not fitting for me, this and this and this and that. And this was my observation too. It's just so easy to shift it to someone else's responsibility and not taking your own. Just as well as leaving a job, in my opinion, because it's your responsibility if you no longer belong, whatever reason it is, to take action steps and perhaps change career, change job, etc. What is here the biggest fear and why people sit for so long in their misery before they take action? I'm sure you do have a good answer to that.
I have an opinion, yes. So I'm a consultant, certified consultant with a DISC personality assessment. And S's, so there's D, I, S, and C, you know, just real quick. D's are dominant, decisive, like to be in charge. I's are very influential, like to talk, act very randomly. S's, teamwork, collaboration are very important, but they fear conflict, they fear change. C's are very compliant with processes, very analytical, right? I'm an SC. So I notice inside myself this resistance to conflict. And 67% of us are S's in some way, you know, first nomenclature or second. Sometimes it can be third. But you're an S, you have an S characteristic, what we call above the line, which is more dominant. And so 67% of the people are resisting having conflict. Well, what's more conflict than walking to your boss and say, hey, you know, the way you're leading me isn't motivating you, or I see you doing things that are opposite of what you're asking me to do or us to do, right? And that creates a conflict, right? So how do you broach that? What most people do is, I'm leaving, and I start looking for another job. And before they let the boss know, they've already got the next job, and it's a two-week notice. They walk in to do the exit interview, and they say, oh, yeah, I saw these things in this organization. Well, why didn't you say so, right?
Discomfort we are avoiding.
Yeah. So when I was squadron commander, I had to constantly be evaluating my flight chiefs by talking to their people to find out what their view was of their flight chief. And I was hoping somebody was watching me, right? At the same time, my boss should be watching me to how my people are reacting, the morale of the organization, the actions, the performance, all those things. Because that's a direct reflection of me at that level. So below me, there's a direct reaction of the flight chief. So I'm constantly evaluating and looking and talking to folks to make sure that they're doing the right thing. But I want to make sure that we think about that we have a responsibility as employees to bring things forward. When I was a captain, our lieutenant colonel, who ended up hiring me to be his exec officer, which was funny because I pushed some things forward of how he wasn't doing certain things and how people in the organization were viewing him. And he actually appreciated it. Now, I tell you, when I was at home writing that up on the computer and typing it up and practicing how I was going to present it to him, I had a lot of fear. That was my career on the line, right? This could go very bad, but I felt it was my responsibility and I did it and it came out very well. So I had some good mentors to teach me how to do it. So we have to learn how to handle conflict. I was listening to a podcast yesterday, John Maxwell Executive Leadership Podcast, which was talking about conflict. And supervisors have to be ready to handle conflict. It's going to happen. Anytime you have people engaged working with each other, conflict will happen. So if we can't manage that conflict and help to overcome it, we will fail as leaders.
I hear you.
Yeah.
You yourself, you made a career transition. You left military, the army eventually.
Air Force.
The Air Force. What is your best career transition? tip. I think this is something lots of people fear too, not just because it is a kind of a conflict too. I mean, you have to quit even if you do it consciously. And especially when we speak of transitioning in between industries, transitioning in between employment, being an employee, and potentially running your own business. What is your advice here?
And my number one is to really figure out what it is you want to do, right? So
How do we
psychopath.
do that? Because I think this is something everybody would like to know. How do I know what I want? We don't learn that in our early developments, not in school. School doesn't teach us you to know what you want. And if you know it, you are not able to state it. At least this is my
Oh,
experience.
you're spot on, right?
Yeah.
The emotional part of our brain does not put things into words very well.
Verbalize it indeed. And if this is not encouraged, it can become a constant internal flame that might be just put out by someone saying that it's impossible. It's that easy as that.
Yeah, sometimes I think one of my weaknesses or challenges is paying attention to my emotions. But at the same time, I think that's one of my strengths. If paying attention to my emotions slows me down and makes me unable to make a decision, that's bad. If paying attention to my emotions helps me make better decisions and move forward in the right direction, that's good. So it all depends on how that works.
Your emotion is a catalyst to clarity.
Correct.
Can you elaborate a little bit?
When I coach people, I'll give you an example, but when I coach people, I try to dig back into their experiences, right? You can talk skills, you can talk interests, you can talk all those different things, but there's an experience piece. Maybe it's something you read, something you heard, a job that you took on. You just never know what it is, right? A life experience. So I'm talking to this one Army Sergeant Major, and we started talking about what he wanted to do because he wasn't sure. And I said, well, tell me a little bit about where you came from. He said, well, I came from Alabama. I said, what was it like? He goes, oh, it was poverty. I mean, people skipping school, not finishing school. It was a life of crime and drugs. And what I saw around me was most of my friends were getting in trouble, going to jail, or dying by their early 20s. And I didn't want that. And my mother didn't want that. So I wanted out of there. And the only path was through the military. So here he was 30 years later at the top of the enlisted force, sergeant major for the Army, right? Not the top one in the Army, but at his level. And so he started talking. I said, so what was your best life experience? And he goes, oh, that's easy. He says, I was in Washington, D.C., and I got to be one of the guys in charge of the USA Olympic basketball dream team coming to D.C. They had just won the gold medal. This is David Robinson, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley. These are all the stars of that time frame. And they talked to the kids from Washington, D.C., the inner city kids. Poverty, right? Think back to this guy in Alabama. Poverty of DC, drugs, absent fathers, all kinds of stuff, single moms struggling with two jobs. And I said, so what happened? He goes, it was amazing how the kids' eyes lit up because most of these basketball players came from a life of poverty and through discipline and consistency and developing their skills and mentors and coaches, they developed into these superstars and it gave these kids hope. And that's what he needed when he was a kid. He needed hope. He needed a path forward out of his situation. So now he's trying to work with kids that are in that same situation he was 30, 40 years later. Now he's working with them to help them have hope. So it takes me digging into their life and figuring out what is it that excites you, but now how can we leverage that for a job? Sometimes that's a volunteer piece, right? Big Brothers Big Sisters, that's a great organization. It's a volunteer. Sometimes it's a youth pastor in a church, not very well paid, but big impact, right? Sometimes it could be leading a big program that you now get more paid for if that's what you need. So we got to figure out where you apply that. He's actually now a program manager, project manager, working on military contracts and doing that as a volunteer work. So each one is a little
Beautiful.
bit different. So
Yeah.
how do you do it?
How did I do it? How did I discover that? It was literally digging far back into what I liked doing as a child.
There you go.
The observations I made, where I got really specific on the industry where I want to be and where I want what where I want to put my energy into, came much later. But back in the days, I was playing with my sister, with my younger sister. My mom has brought from the doctor's practice. She was working in some those data booklets, you know, that it was not digitalized yet, but the doctor used to write the diagnosis and the medication, etc., on a piece of cardboard that was folded. And my mom brought us some to play with, so we established an entire hospital.
No, cool.
It was there was hospitalized everyone, every doll, every teddy bear, everybody who potentially had a made up issue, and we made this big. There was emergency room going on back then in the television, so we knew all of the big cases, and we literally started opening up those dolls and sewing them together, and we played those scenes that were very dramatic and tragic, but nobody ever passed in our surgery. So none of these
Oh,
dolls,
nobody died, nobody passed
nobody
away.
died, nobody passed away. So we saved them all literally, and this hope we were having there as children. So this surgery was not something traumatic we've been playing, or we were not traumatized by that. We loved to save them. And now that I see like how much love and how much energy I can pour into people's potential, and it doesn't always need to be paid. This is just so much. I'm so energized by it. And I had to first discover that to get really a confirmation of it's meant for you, no matter how hard your path is. Because let's be real, today marketing yourself as a solopreneur with a small business,
The
working your behind off quite a bit. But
challenge.
honestly, what I can do with that and what I get back, no one. It's gonna take that ever for me. It's priceless. Yeah.
No,
So
I love that. That's great. Great.
yeah.
You and I are so similar in that, finding back to the childhood experiences or work experiences and bring that forward, because there's always something. I've found there's always something there.
I always like to say it's all within us. We just need to slow down and tap into that wisdom. And it might sometimes sound too magical, too spiritual, whatever it is, but if we are just stay on the ground and be like, no, this is the entire truth. It's within you. You
That's
are
right.
meant for a path. And no matter when we take them up, it's never too late, never too early. We can always change. There is literally, I don't know if there is something like a blueprint. There is not a blueprint for everyone. I think it's pretty much flexible. On this stage, Don, I would like to mention, or to you, dear listener, that first of all, there is a career transition guide in the show notes for you, made by Don. Download that if you are currently in the position of transitioning your career. If you needed support right here, right now, this is your invitation and your permission slip to ask for help. If you find this conversation helpful, then please share it with someone who needs to hear it. Connect with us. We would like to hear what your biggest takeaway was, if you learned something, because then we will produce more of this.
That's
This is
right.
all about you. It's not about us. So feel free to share it wherever you think it belongs. Don, before we round up our conversation, I do have two questions. You are a part of a Society of the Sane.
Society of American Military Engineers.
Exactly. What is that all about?
So it's a corporate governmental kind of a group that comes together to help improve the infrastructure, the installations for our military projection of power, whether it's Army installations, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, public health. It's to make sure that we're doing the best job we can to develop, maintain, construct, et cetera, those. Part of that's environmental. So that's what the main part of the organization does is we've realized though that a lot of the military people are transitioning out of the service. So they created in the 2025 goal plan a goal to help military transition. So I'm active in that. And then there's also, we need to develop leaders, just like we were talking about in this conversation, right? If we're not developing the leaders to be the best they can, the organizations can't be the best. The results can't be the best. The military can't act as best it needs to. So for 4 years, I was running a leadership lab in San Antonio. I've now delegated that to somebody else, and I've stepped forward into a Texas region leadership development program. And helping from that perspective. So I love giving back to my community, to my tribe, and helping them, right, transition out of the service to get the job that they really want, like I got, and then to develop into that position.
I see that. And I can feel the passion and the spark in your eyes. And this is probably why you will never get tired of your job. And my last question to round up these beautiful conversations on, what do people misunderstand the most about you?
Ooh, wow. Most misunderstand about me. I think it's the emotion, how much I make decisions on emotion. I had bosses come back and, you know, criticize me of different things because I make decisions different. I'm a different personality. I get different experiences than they do, right? Mm-hmm. I'm my own person. I do it a lot from emotion. I do it a lot from connection. I was just at a chamber meet and mingle this morning. And I came home kind of high on the emotional because I got to interact with people. People were walking by saying hi that I had talked to previously. I was meeting new people and it just gave me a lot of energy. And typically in engineering and even in military, there's not that same emotion and personal connection, mm-hmm. right? They're more the C style, analytical, compliant, yeah. right? Withdrawn. Yeah. And I'm an ambivert. I'm in the middle between an introvert and an extrovert. I'm an ambivert, which I can spend half my time introvert, half my time extrovert, and that gives me the best balance. I can't go either way too long. So it's about personal awareness, mm-hmm. and I think that's really important.
I appreciate you being vulnerable here as well and sharing all your insights, giving us the insights as well on why people do certain career changes, because we easily judge. In mm-hmm. our society, and why did he do that? And maybe you should do that. It would be better for you to eat like me because mm-hmm. I've done great. And what is often misunderstood, it is the U.S. Army. Why would someone choose mm-hmm. to go to the military? And as you just mentioned, mm-hmm. that your mm-hmm. mentee from Alabama, who it helped him getting out of poverty. So there are choices to be respected that we mm-hmm. make. And I think it would be a more beautiful world if we would mm-hmm. respect each other a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And at least if we can mm-hmm. entirely relate, we can mm-hmm. try to understand.
Yeah. So that is one of those things we have to challenge ourselves in it. Have you found success in developing a relationship when you try to understand them instead of expect them to act the same way you do?
Absolutely. Yeah. It is a challenge for myself until today. And I think it will always be because mm-hmm. I have a gift where I do foresee a lot. I hear the people talk and I know, but I am not the one to put this opinion upon you. I am mm-hmm. here to guide you and either you find it yourself or not. Mm-hmm. But giving this space when putting myself second in this conversation is definitely something that has always led to big success. Yes.
Yeah, I love the same thing about coaching, just like you, right? Is helping people realize inside themselves. It's so much more powerful than me saying, you know what I see in you? And giving it to them, asking them a question to help them discover it themselves. Oh, it's so powerful. Now they Absolutely. Own it. They own it. And they're going to, and then we help them move forward. I have a coach and we met 2 days ago. And I worked for about an hour and a half on my preparation, just thinking through what I wanted to talk about, where I was stuck. And boy, he asked two quick questions. I was like, how do you do that? But it was because I was so emotionally tied to it. I couldn't separate myself to ask the bigger question. And he did it. And I do that for him. We barter our services, help each other.
Beautiful. Let's see a little bit more of this in the future. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us, Don. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was a pleasure to be with you. I want to learn more about Austria and where you came from. We can talk later.